I'm Eric Rosales. Tonight on EWTN News Nightly, President Trump meets with European leaders and President Zelensky, what they discuss before the upcoming meeting with President Putin. After the collision of two Chinese ships, the U.S. Navy deploys two vessels to the highly contested area, what they're doing in the South China Sea. A new study looks at the decline of believers in the U.S. and proposed solutions. We speak to one of the authors. Plus, turning sorrow into joy. How Pope Leo says that we can take the challenges in life and turn them into moments of conversion. These stories and much more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you so much for being with us. Our top story tonight, President Donald Trump tells EWTN News that he does not think he can persuade Russia's Vladimir Putin to stop killing people in Ukraine. The president made the statement shortly after he met virtually with the head of Ukraine and European leaders to discuss the 3.5-year war. For the very latest, let's check in with White House correspondent Owen Jensen. Owen.
Well, good evening to you, Eric. As President Trump tries to end the war in Ukraine, the number of civilians being killed there in the war continues to climb almost daily. And today, at an event at the Kennedy Center, I was able to ask President Trump directly about that.
Sir, when you meet with Vladimir Putin Friday in Alaska,
yeah,
do you believe you can convince him to stop targeting civilians in Ukraine?
Well, I'll tell you what. I've had that conversation with him. I've had a lot of good conversations with him. Then I go home and I see that a rocket hit a nursing home or a rocket hit an apartment building and people are laying dead in the street. So I guess the answer to that is no, because I've had this conversation. I want to end the war.
Before President Donald Trump meets with the Russian president in Anchorage, he held a virtual call today with European leaders and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, who traveled to Berlin to attend the conference.
We had a very good call. He was on the call. President Zelensky was on the call. I would rate it a 10, you know, very, very friendly.
Він старається натиснути перед зустрічю на Алясі.
And at a news briefing in Berlin, the Ukrainian president telling reporters, Putin is bluffing. Definitely does not want peace and seeks to occupy all of Ukraine. President Zelensky calling for an immediate ceasefire. And German Chancellor Friedrich Merz said the European leaders had a constructive and good discussion with President Trump. Also, President Trump says he would like to meet jointly with Zelensky and Putin.
There's a very good chance that we're going to have a second meeting, which will be more productive than the first, because the first is I'm going to find out where we are and what we're doing.
And if Putin does not end the war, then President Trump says Russia will pay a price.
There will be very severe consequences.
With the Alaska summit just a few days away, President Trump ripping press coverage, writing, "Very unfair media is at work on my meeting with Putin." And he blasts critics who said, "Putin has already won." Trump responds, "What's that all about? We are winning on everything. The fake news is working overtime."
And while at the Kennedy Center today, President Trump, of which he is a chairman, he announced renovation plans for the building. And in addition, this year's honorees for its annual award, including Sylvester Stallone, Kiss, and Gloria Gaynor, were revealed. We'll have more coming up later on. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
For more, let's bring in former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine, John E. Herbst. Ambassador, thank you so much for joining us. As we know, French President Emmanuel Macron says that President Trump was very clear in the meeting that the U.S. wants to achieve a ceasefire. Do you think that President Trump is capable of securing this deal with his meeting coming up on Friday with Russian President Vladimir Putin?
I think there's no chance that this meeting would lead to a ceasefire. It could be used to eventually get to one. But right now, Putin thinks he has the advantage over Trump. Because remember, just 1 week ago, the American position was, the Trump position was, if Putin does not agree to a ceasefire by August 8, massive sanctions, massive tariffs will be imposed on Russia and its principal trading partners. Since basically starting by Thursday night, Friday morning, Washington time last week, that position had changed to having a summit. So Putin was able, by proposing a meeting, to avoid sanctions. And only serious pressure on Russia could lead to a stable ceasefire.
And during the meeting, President Zelensky said that he told the group of that Russian President Vladimir Putin is actually bluffing about the impacts of sanctions. Are sanctions actually hitting Russia hard right now?
There's no question that sanctions are hitting Russia hard. And the proof, despite all the Russian denials, is every peace conversation they have to actually have a ceasefire, they demand an end to sanctions.
Now, Trump said that both Ukraine and Russia will have to swap land for peace. How likely will that happen?
Well, Zelensky has expressed a willingness to compromise, including on territory, but he needs strong measures on security. Russia has expressed no interest in compromise whatsoever, and that's something that American policy needs to take into account.
Now, what if there's no progress following this meeting on Friday with Putin? You know, what's next then? The war continues?
Well, I believe, well, for sure the war is going to continue until Putin decides he cannot win it on the battlefield. Trump spent 2 months before agreeing to the summit, putting pressure on Russia. He needs to resume that effort, because if he does, one, by sending weapons to NATO allies who send them to Ukraine, it makes it hard for Russia to make gains on the battlefield. And by increasing economic pressure on Russia, it reduces Russia's ability to finance the war. That's the key to establishing a stable peace, which is President Trump's stated goal.
And up on Capitol Hill, a number of senators are working on more sanctions against Russia. Will that work as well?
Well, what we've seen, and this to me is unfortunate, the Senate has worked hard for sanctions, but Republicans in the Senate are unwilling to push hard for sanctions against the wishes of President Trump. If the Republicans in the Senate were willing to do that, I think that would increase the odds of moving towards serious economic pressure on the Kremlin faster.
Well, Ambassador Herbst, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thank you. Bye-bye.
The other major story that we're following tonight, after 8 years of legislative work, the lower house of parliament in Uruguay approves a measure to legalize euthanasia. The proposal now moves to the Senate, which is expected to approve it by the end of the year. Uruguay would become the third Latin American country to legalize assisted suicide. It will join Colombia and Ecuador. Uruguay's Catholic bishop spoke out against the measure in a recent video. The bishops of Uruguay said, in a statement, quote, "For God, every life is infinitely loved and worthy of our full care," adding, quote, "Our society must welcome, protect, and accompany every person until the end of their earthly life." For more on this, let's turn to Ray Rojas, director of Latino Outreach and United Nations representative for National Right to Life. Thank you so much for joining us, Ray. First off, your take on the vote by the lower house of parliament. Is it a surprise?
It isn't a surprise, Eric, and thank you for having me. It's great seeing you again. It's a huge disappointment, because the bishops in particular did such a brilliant job in getting the message to these delegates of the danger that they were placing on the people of Uruguay by allowing this law to pass. It's almost a sure bet that it will also pass in the Senate. And even though they argue, those who propose, and I'm going to read from the law, you know, the law claims to establish a comprehensive legal framework, right? And it says that to qualify, patients, and listen carefully, patients must be adults with terminal or incurable illnesses causing suffering, must give legal consent, and must be evaluated by multiple medical and psychological professionals. Well, life is terminal. We're all dying, and the language is so vague that we know that these strongholds that they're touting as a win for autonomy are going to fold, and we have the experience. You know, here in our continent, in Canada, just 10 years ago, they passed a similar law. They called it medical aid in dying, with the same kind of restrictions. And now we know that in Canada, within 6 years of that law passing, they extended it to cover people with chronic illness. Well, without defining it, anyone can say they have a chronic illness. Then they expanded it to people with disabilities. And now in 2026, those with a mental health condition can also come. And, you know, when a country redefines care as killing, those safeguards fall by the wayside quicker than they can imagine. We see it in Europe. This is now the third country in South America to do this. And it's just egregious. It is not autonomous. This is not a win for autonomy. This is a win for the medical profession, who it's easier for to kill a patient than to care for a patient. And we know, sadly, that Uruguay's healthcare system is lacking, for lack of a better word. And honestly, most of the doctors who testified, and I listened to this testimony, this is an out for them. It's so much less expensive to kill someone than to care for them.
Wow.
And autonomy is lost because patients feel as if they are a burden.
Man, I tell you, this is opening up Pandora's box over there. And, you know, the Catholic bishops were so strong in speaking out against this effort to legalize assisted suicide. But does that say anything about the state of the church in Uruguay?
It does. We have to understand that they have, and I'll use an American colloquialism here, they have a very progressive government who has really come down on the church. This is the same government who pushed and won rights for homosexuals to additional freedoms to them. And they do a really good job of, and as you listen to the debates, as I did last night, they do a really good job of demonizing the church as, you know, old-fashioned, not really, you know, in touch with what is happening now. And it was incredible for me to hear, because it was the church who was providing the best argument against this. And it wasn't just a theological one. And of course, the bishops did that, but it was also a scientific one. The bishops spoke, and they, and their literature and the things that they discussed was about, let's increase the government, you know, instead of killing people, the bishop said, why don't we increase programs in palliative care, which is when we can take care of people who are in pain, who are suffering, and we provide them with the goodness, the kindness, and the real dignity of ending their life naturally, not being tied to a gurney and injected as if they were, you know, a convicted criminal in a Texas jail. The bishops gave the absolute best scientific evidence against this, and no one listened. They were just set aside as being, you know, these, you know, old guys.
Right.
None of that was true. They gave the best argument and they rejected it on a, you know, by a 2/3 vote.
Well, Ray,
it's astounding.
We're going to leave it right there. But thank you so much for your insight and thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Eric.
In other news, in the Middle East, multiple airstrikes target the city of Khan Yunis in the Gaza Strip. Well, this comes as Israeli Prime Minister says ceasefire efforts are now focused on a deal to release all remaining hostages at once. Previously, the plan was to push for a partial release. Hamas says a delegation of its leaders are in Cairo for talks with Egyptian officials. Wildfires caused by arsonists and thunderstorms are raging across southern Europe. Now, this was a scene there. Wow, take a look at that in Portugal today. Firefighters are being stretched thin as they struggle to beat back the flames intensified by the strong winds and scorching temperatures. In southern Albania, at St. Elijah Church, it sustained major damage after it caught fire. The church was built almost 300 years ago by the personal secretary of the Albanian ruler. Authorities say 24 wildfires are still active in that country. The United States briefly deployed two warships in the disputed South China Sea. The USS Higgins and USS Cincinnati were deployed to uphold freedom of navigation in the South China Sea. It's the same area where just 2 days ago, Chinese Navy and Coast Guard ships collided while trying to drive away a smaller Philippine ship. Well, the high seas incident was caught on video and alarmed Western and Asian nations. Well, back here at home, Congress is under pressure to investigate conditions at detention facilities run by the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office, also known as ICE. Those ICE centers house around 58,000 detainees. Reports of abuse and overcrowding have been raised. And just this week, a Colorado Democrat says he visited a facility and was not happy about what he found.
This has been the most difficult visit in terms of getting information, getting answers out of the facility, out of the employees, and being obstructed from conducting full oversight that I've had in over 6 years.
Lawmakers have the legal authority to make unauthorized visits to ICE detention centers, but some have been turned away. New guidance asks for a 72-hour notice.
The reason we gave previous notice, we wanted to see what the heck was in there. But because we were forced to give 7 days notice before we went, it was very convenient, a lot of the things we saw.
Republicans say they want the facilities to be humane and believe they already are.
You know, I visited these facilities under both administrations, and I've never had a problem with ICE facilities. They've always been allowed me to view everything I wanted. I've taken pictures, I've done videos, I've spoken to people that were there.
Republican Congressman Carlos Jimenez of Florida has a 1,000-person detention facility in his Miami area district. He says he found nothing wrong during a recent visit to the Chrome Detention Center.
That's not the Ritz, but I can tell you that there's nothing going in there that would cause for alarm.
But the top Democrat on the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Dick Durbin, issued a report claiming abuses are rampant at that facility. He cited overcrowding, a lack of adequate health care, and unsanitary conditions. Republican Senator Roger Marshall says ICE has a tough job.
It's not an easy task to house those people and give them proper due process as well. I think that DHS is doing the very best job they can, but we have nothing to hide either.
A number of Democrats have filed lawsuits against the Trump administration about conditions at ICE facilities. Just this week, a New York judge ruled that a Manhattan detention facility must provide mats, bottled water, and even additional meals to detainees if requested. Congress is likely to have hearings when lawmakers return in September. Well, we still have a lot more to come on EWTN News Nightly, including a possible solution to the Catholic Church's biggest problem we'll explain, and why 20 attorney generals are writing the Trump administration about the abortion drug mifepristone. Welcome back. More than 20 Republican attorneys general are demanding that the Trump administration reinstate safety protocols for the abortion drug mifepristone. The safeguards were scrapped under both the Biden and Obama administrations. In the letter, they wrote that the drug's adverse effects happen 22 times more often than stated on the drug's label. Those effects include hemorrhaging, emergency room visits, and ectopic pregnancies. A federal appeals court says Arkansas can ban transgender procedures for minors. The ruling reverses a lower court's decision that blocked the law from taking effect. The Court of Appeals says Arkansas has, quote, a compelling interest in protecting the health of minors. A new study out this week shows that the majority of Americans raised Catholic no longer practice their faith, but it also shows how we can reverse that trend. First, let's take a look at the numbers. The study published in the Church Life Journal found that in 1973, 34% of those affected were raised Catholic, went to Mass every Sunday. In 2002, that number fell to 20% and fell even further in 2022 to just 11%. We like to welcome Michael Rota, professor of philosophy at the University of St. Thomas in Minnesota, and one of the authors of the study. Michael, thank you so much for joining us. You know, I got to tell you that the fact that there's been a decline in religious practice belief in the U.S. is nothing new. It's disturbing. But your study actually diagnosed the problem and how to fix it. Tell us more about it.
Well, the three largest reasons that retention among Catholics. So when people are raised Catholic, we can ask if they're still Catholic, if they're still practicing as adults. Today, we're losing about 9 out of 10 cradle Catholics in the United States. The three biggest reasons are weaker social connections among Catholics, the values gap between Catholic morality and mainstream American morality, and the internet and smartphones.
And you say one of the main keys to reversing this trend is community. Talk to us about how that's important.
Right. Well, 100 years ago, Catholic community came pretty easily for most Catholics in the U.S. You didn't have to go look for it. Maybe you were a Polish Catholic in Milwaukee, you lived in the Polish neighborhood, you went to the Polish parish, it just kind of happened. today, our mode of living is our neighbors are more heterogeneous in terms of religion. Our friends, our coworkers have come from all different faiths or no faiths. So we have to seek community out. Just going to Sunday Mass and leaving, if that's all the religious activity you do as a family, that doesn't work anymore for handing on the faith to our children, because the wider culture will no longer guide them back to faith. Rather, it's more likely to take them away.
Yeah, that kind of goes to my next question, is how can Catholic families and parishes work together to build this lasting community? And even us here at EWTN can play a role in that.
Absolutely. So community is a key. We know a lot about the factors that make it more likely a cradle Catholic youth will retain their Catholic identity as they grow into adulthood. Here are some of the factors. If both parents are on the same page religiously and are very active religiously, that helps. If it's clear to the children that the faith makes a difference in the everyday lives of the parents, that helps. If the kids are religiously active, that helps. If the kids have many faith-supportive peers, that helps. If the kids have mentors or grandparents, adults who aren't their parents who are religious mentors for them, that helps. Well, you get all those things if your children are growing up in a relationally rich religious community. Another question is, I've so far been speaking about what parents can do, but what can pastors do? What can religious leaders at the parish or diocesan level do? There, I think there's also room for improvement. In large sociological surveys, we see that evangelicals typically do much better promoting community within the congregation than Catholics. And so what parishes can do, if they don't already have vibrant Catholic lay movements in their parish, they can begin to offer activities that will pull in the believing but not highly practicing parishioners and families.
Do you think the fact that we have a pope from the United States, that this could lead to a rise in conversion and reversions?
Well, I certainly love our new pope. And it's wonderful to be able to hear him preach in English and just to have that instant understanding. So that's nice for us native English speakers. But really the main drivers of retention in the Catholic Church will have more to do with how the child's life is structured and how religiously active their parents are and their peers are. So a great American pope is a help. But the main thing is really in the parents' control, more in the parents' and children's control than who their pastor may be or who the pope may be at a certain time.
Well, Michael Rota, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Up next on EWTN News Nightly, she's a familiar face for our EWTN audience. Now, Mary Rice Hassan has caught the attention of Pope Leo. We'll tell you why. And sorrow and joy, two very separate emotions, but they may be more connected than you think. A lesson from Pope Leo's general audience. We have some good news to share. Mary Rice Hassan, a senior fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and frequent guest on EWTN, is being honored by the Vatican. The Holy See is giving Hassan an award for distinguished service to the Catholic Church. One colleague says Hassan, quote, is a gift to the Catholic Church, to the United States, and she will receive the award next month in a private ceremony surrounded by family and friends. And Bishop Michael Burbidge, the head of the Catholic Diocese of Arlington, will also attend. Well, Pope Leo reminds the faithful that sorrow for our sins can be an opportunity for conversion and joy.
Dio invece accetta di soffrire.
At the weekly talk, the Holy Father urges the pilgrims to recall that we are God's beloved children embraced by his forgiving love. The Pope also explained that seeking a real conversion helps us in the journey towards salvation despite our fragility. Today, the Church commemorates two saints, St. Poncian and St. Hippolytus. St. Poncian became Pope in the year 230 during a period of Christian persecution. He was exiled to die in the salt mines of the island, Italian island, Sardinia. Hippolytus was a priest and theologian who rebelled against the church when Callistus became pope. However, he was also sent to the mines of Sardinia and met Poncian, who helped him to reconcile with the church. Both died in the mines as martyrs for faith. I want to thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Eric Rosales. Have yourself a wonderful night y vaya con Dios.